is Scott Merrick from the Vanderbilt University Center for Science Outreach, and I want to thank you for downloading this episode of Snacks for the Brain. We're truly grateful for your interest in what we're doing to bring the joy of research and discovery to K-12 students and teachers the whole world over. If you're not in either of these categories, maybe you're just an interesting person who's interested in the world. In any case, welcome. Bi-weekly or so, we'll share some fun, independent, pod-safe music. We'll interview working research scientists, students, or leading proponents of educational change, and we'll toss in an occasional sound-seeing tour or computer tip.
We'll be right here
whenever you need us at blogs.vanderbilt.edu/s4theb and at the CSO website at scienceoutreach.org, sharing good brain munchies with you. So, listen up. Let's get right down to it with episode number
76.
A Snack for the Brain.
Welcome to Snacks for the Brain, episode 76, reporting out the November 2008 meeting of the Vanderbilt Web Spiders. There's so much going on at Vanderbilt that I wonder if we'll ever run out of topics for Snacks for the Brain. Could that ever happen?
I doubt it, Monty.
Case in point, every month or so, a group of 25 to 50 people who are interested in the internet get together somewhere on Vanderbilt's campus to share thoughts with one another. In the words of fearless leader Melanie Moran, Associate Director of the Vanderbilt News Agency, Vanderbilt Web Spiders is a group of people interested in web development from across Vanderbilt University that meets once a month to share ideas, identify needs, and ask and answer questions of each other about the latest and greatest in web use and development. Ms. Moran maintains a website at vanderbilt.edu/spiders, which elaborates,
"The web has revolutionized the way Vanderbilt communicates with the world, and the number of people developing websites at Vanderbilt has exponentially increased. The Web Developer Group was started to provide a forum for networking, sharing, and learning. Anyone who is a member of the Vanderbilt community, student, faculty, or staff, can join the group. There are no dues."
I like that last part. Web Spiders meet for 1 hour each month with topics ranging from browser compatibility to content management systems. We also have an email listserv where members can get meeting notices and post questions or tips for one another. The Spiders archive an audio podcast for those who can't make the meeting, and I got permission from Ms. Moran to excerpt from that for this episode of Snacks for the Brain. If you want to listen to the entire meeting, you can get on over to http://blogs.vanderbilt.edu/spiders and do so. But I thought it'd be of service to post a bit from each of the three mini presentations I got to participate in, including one from me about education and Second Life. That day I shared a little video of the new Vanderbilt Center for Science Outreach presence in Second Life, located on Lighthouse Learning Island. And the video can be accessed at blogs.vanderbilt.edu/s4theb in today's show notes. Let's get into some music first, then I'll share out from Pod Spiders. You've been hearing a bit of England's New Age artist Adam Fielding's work under my voice. Since at least a portion of my share out this episode certainly heralds a New Age, let's just stay with the theme. Here's the rest of his Traveling Light track from his CD, Distant Activity, available for purchase and download at magnatune.com. Play on, Adam. Thank you. I think I'll share out only two brief portions of presentations at the Web Spiders Meetup, just in the service of brevity. The first one is from the director of the Vanderbilt News Archive, John Lynch, a fascinating guy who shared a particularly amusing set of news spots from the NBC News in 1977 about one Buster Lee Blevins. The Vanderbilt News Archive is an online searchable database and collection of video recordings collected since 1968. Find out more about it at tvnews.vanderbilt.edu. Mr. Lynch talked for around 20 minutes, and I want to share a portion of his engaging chat from somewhere around its middle. Here is John Lynch.
You can click on the camera or on the view video button on the description screen, and it should bring up a small video.
And finally, at the city jail in Chesapeake, Virginia, an inmate named Buster Lee Blevins, serving time for passing bad checks, was given the duty of taking the sheriff's best bloodhound for a walk. Well, the two of them just kept walking, and they haven't been seen since Sunday. Normally, the sheriff would pursue Buster Lee with the bloodhound, but he can't. She left with him. Good night for all of us at NBC.
Brickley used to do a lot of stories like that. Most of them were one-offs. You'd never see them again. This one has a life of its own.
ABC News, Johnson.
In response to a widespread popular demand for more information about Buster Lee Blevins, he was the inmate of the Chesapeake, Virginia jail who had the duty of walking the sheriff's bloodhound. He and the dog walked away from the jail to get him. The sheriff couldn't use the dog to pursue Buster Lee because the dog left with him. But what has happened since is that Blevins stopped at a gas station and dropped off the dog, saying he had found it, and he kept going. Well, now the sheriff has the hound dog back, but Buster Lee is still gone.
He's going to find him again.
You'll notice a commercial came up at the end of that. We did keep the commercials, so we have an interesting collection of commercials as well as of the news. So Buster Lee just keeps giving to NBC.
In the Chesapeake, Virginia jail, given the job of walking the sheriff's bloodhound used for chasing escapees, and the two of them just walked away. Buster Lee dropped off the dog a few miles from the prison and kept going. He is still gone. When we asked the sheriff about it, his office was a little annoyed, and they said, well, we did get the dog back, didn't we?
Well, this one, you notice it didn't begin quite correctly. That there's a reason for that, which we can fix, but what I wanted to tell you is that those files exist as whole shows. And so what's happening is that the computer database has a math system built in for determining where in the show the item is. And what it means is that that show didn't begin precisely at the same time every other show begins, and so we have to make an adjustment to make it work right. So it was about 3 seconds or 4 seconds shorter than it at the beginning than it should have been. But Buster goes one more time.
Finally, we'd like to thank everyone for letters, cards, kind words, and especially for a card sending holiday greetings and signed Buster Lee Blevins. As I recall, it was Buster Lee who was serving time in a Virginia jail who got the job of walking the sheriff's bloodhound, the dog they used to chase escapees. Well, he and the dog just kept walking and they couldn't pursue him because he had the dog. Well, we're not sure if this is Buster Lee himself or an imposter, but in any case, thank you. Merry Christmas to everybody, and good night from Washington.
And to all of you from all of us in New York, a very Merry Christmas. It's our practice at this time of the year.
You'll notice that
the names of some of the people who make this program possible.
At the bottom of the picture, there's a black bar. And there's a time date line, what we call the time date line at the top, which gives the network the time, central time, and the date of the broadcast. The top we burn into every item at the time we record them here. The black bar at the bottom is because the original tape, videotape for this was what was called 1-inch type A. It had a single head and what's called a D-wrap, which meant the head left the tape on every revolution at some point. And it was a small point. They called it a D-wrap, implying it was like half the thing. It wasn't. It was a few centimeters. But every time the head leaves, then there's no information. So that's missing from the picture. We don't have it. We never recorded it because that format wouldn't. So the black bar was actually something we put over there to cover up the noise. Not because we didn't necessarily want the noise to display like here, but because if you try to deal with videotape technology and you're going from one videotape to another and all you've got is noise with no information about the shape and size of the picture, then the videotape machine can't handle it. So we had to substitute something for that to make it work. So those are two artifacts that you'll find in our entire black and white collection, which goes to May 1st of 79. May 1st of 79, we switched to a new format with dual head machine that doesn't have this kind of problem. The other thing you might notice is if you look in the top right hand corner, there's a bend, a little black spot. That's tape skew. It's another artifact of dealing with old tape machinery. So it's something that's now permanently part of the collection and we can't actually fix. But it's a result of having recorded on videotape in the first place.
John, we have about 5 minutes left. Can you talk about how people can use the collection, for what purposes is it allowed to be used and all that sort of thing?
This just sort of gives you a sort of sense of how the database works, how that works. We are open to everybody. That's the first thing. But what you can do is limited. So anybody who uses the database can order from the archive on either DVD or VHS tape a lone copy. And so last night as I left, I think about 10 orders were going out of the archive to various places. Usually 90% of them are going into the U.S., a small percentage to Canada, a smaller percentage to England, and then a smaller percentage to anywhere else in the world. And there's almost no place that's been unrepresented in terms of an order. You can use it for research purposes. You can use it for educational purposes. You can use it for anything else that fair use law will allow you to use it for, just as if you recorded it off TV yourself. What you can't do is, of course, use it for like entertainment purposes without getting licensing. And licensing doesn't come from us, but it comes from the originator of the material, the networks. We don't participate in that other than that we'll give you a phone number and let you call them. And they will sometimes say yes, sometimes say no. A lot depends on what you're asking for, and a lot depends on what you intend to do with it. For instance, I got an email the other day, got copied on an email the other day from CBS in which they stated definitively that they will not license stuff for the web, period. I don't know that I completely believe that, but that's their official position. And I think it's because of control. I mean, the web is, they fear the lack of control they have on the web. Because once it's on one website, then it's on another website. It starts multiplying. We normally loan for 30 days. We can only loan. We're basically written into the copyright law, not by name, although we are written in by name in the explanation to it. But our practices in the 70s were written into the copyright law. Some advantages and disadvantages to that. The disadvantage is there was no web then. So that we were only thinking about being able to physically loan material. And today, I could argue, but I can't get a legal leg to stand on, that sending a streaming video is really loaning material. But the networks, with little more, but a lot more money, but with a little more reason than I have, argue that that's actually a broadcast of material. And so that becomes the central debate, which is why we've chosen to stream with permission. So a number of years ago, we went and got permission from CNN, and just this year, we got permission from NBC to stream their materials to member institutions. And for the most limited part is NBC's, it has to be a higher education institution. It can't be public schools or private schools on that level. It has to be university, colleges, that kind of thing.
All right, and because this show is going long, I'm going to go straight into a portion of my piece, Education in Second Life, and lead you out with another tasty treat from Great Britain's immensely talented Adam Fielding, master of New Age ambience. Go listen, purchase, and download Adam's indie music at magnatune.com.
I work for the Vanderbilt Center of Science one day a week, on Mondays, and then I teach little kids at university school computers, and then I have a little internet startup called Movers. We're working with medical simulations for online nursing training, so we need to talk, probably. Why am I here? Because there are a whole bunch of different universities in Second Life, and Vanderbilt's not there. And I'm wondering why. So I want to show you and maybe spark your imaginations a little bit, because we've got all kinds of creative people and experts in this room. I pulled a few universities onto the slide to show you who's working actively in Second Life. And the universities like Harvard and Princeton, New York University, these slides are in at SlideShare, and you can access those from scottmerrick.net or just search for it in SlideShare. I have them at Google Docs too, but if you go to scottmerrick.net, you have a nice little side-by-side display of PowerPoints in Google Docs and SlideShare. So another little experiment. Each one of these is a link that will take you to explore in Second Life. And I said Vanderbilt's not in Second Life, but as of last week, Vanderbilt is in Second Life with the Center for Science Outreach. I leased a building with my boss's permission, and it is at Lighthouse Learning Island, and that's me. So I worked on it a little bit this past week, and Lighthouse Learning Island, who knows of Kathy Schrock? Anybody hear that name? She's a pioneer in elementary education technology, and she's a discovery educator, and she's one of these people who goes around and talks to, you know, thousands of people in a room and earns thousands of dollars to do that about educational change. Well, Kathy's been using Second Life for a little over a year to meet with her district teachers. And she taught me something really interesting. She said she never in grant applications uses the phrase Second Life. She uses the phrase synchronous online meeting platform, because that's really what it's most valuable for, at least for educators. I consider it a really integral part of my professional learning network. And I'm hoping that over the next year or so, as we lease this land from Kathy, it's a parcel of land on her fairly traditional looking island, I'm hoping that we can develop a proof of concept to get some fuel for grant applications so that we can buy our own sim. And I probably suspect that Vanderbilt has enough money to do that now, but I also suspect that they're going to need a little proof about how this works. And I mean, it's clear and obvious that other schools are using it, and a little bit of work with Google will show you how they're doing it. Okay, there's my blog. I just changed this picture. I need to tweak it, but there's a video here.
Left is the CSO Theater. Comfy cushions, beanbags, chairs. I have a seat by right-clicking and saying sit here. And then go down and turn on my media player. There's a little sign underneath that easel display. Tell people to do that. And the movie that I've set to play will play. Currently running. A beautiful PSA that was set up for the Vanderbilt School for Science and Math.
This is a partnership between Vanderbilt University and the Center Science Outreach for 25 students per day in the Nashville Public School.
Very cool. I'm not going to show the whole thing, but visitors to the site will, of course, see the whole thing, either groups or by themselves. Often this area is basically a three-dimensional website that reflects pages at our website at scienceoutreach.org. If you click on those, you get an interface that allows you to open the page in an external browser or cancel. There's Visti. And off to my left is a Snacks for the Brain podcast pickle player, which will open up another external browser to play episode of choice from Snacks for the Brain. Walking across, carefully navigating the stairwell so I don't bonk my head, is the School for Science and Math website with a message from our director and the homepage for the School for Science and Math. Again, interactive. And off in this area is the freebie zone with a library-like feel to it. Another podcast pickle player for Snacks for the Brain, and boxes that can be purchased for zero lindens. That's the exchange unit. Or copied. The top ones have landmarks, and if you click on the cardboard box there on the second shelf, you get this browser that opens with a very extensive web page full of good science sites in Second Life. And yes, friends and neighbors, we are on that page. Note card also opens, so you've got that in your inventory for future reference. Let's go upstairs. Still designing, still experimenting, but we've got a full kitchen off to the right with an espresso machine that delivers cups of espresso, so you can sit around and have your wood loops, sit at the kitchen counter and chat. And an informal meeting space, people can sit in these lovely deck chairs and enjoy the view. There's a little desk area, I haven't quite decided what to do with that, but I did put a moon there that you can kick around, and it lights up at night. Ooh. Off to the last side, you didn't see it much there, but off to the left is a new YouTube video player that I'll stock with science videos. This is a formal conference area. The table that I built, the logo on it, and a rotating globe that actually holds light. And I'll set my settings to midnight so you can see that. And I'm going to zoom out. And you can sort of see where we're located. The island is really much more populated than it looks in this, because as you zoom out, your Second Life browser will sort of conserve resources. I put a little hammock there for a nap after a hard day's work designing the building's accoutrement. Here's a nice sunrise as the sun rises on Vanderbilt Center for Science Outreach in Second Life.
Here you go. So there's the movie that I put in. Thank you very much. This is, it actually looks different now. I took the hammock out and put a fireplace in because it's so cold.
How long did it take?
It's cold in the world.
How long did it take to create that presentation?
That little movie, a couple of hours maybe, not too long. I did it with Windows Movie Maker.
You might have said this when I had stepped out, but how long did it take you to create the Catholics?
I probably put in not more than 10 or 12 hours on it, off and on. Uh-huh. So I was thinking as I was walking over here that I really didn't have to come here if you guys were all in Second Life, we'd be there. And I've done a number of presentations in Second Life and seen a number of presentations. I work with ISTE, the International Society for Technology and Education, and they have a very robust presence. It's an 85,000 member organization with over 3,000 of them in Second Life. Kathy, I started to tell you, uses Lighthouse Learning Island for her district meetings. She's the district tech coordinator, facilitator for Cape Cod. And she built these little schools and meeting place, and she told her people in her that she's used to doing regular meetings in real life. No, you don't have to drive across the island to a school and sit in a straight back chair and have a meeting. You drive home, get a tasty beverage, get into your jammies, and dress professionally in Second Life. But come to the meeting because it has voice, it has the ability to question and answer, it has the ability to archive text, and as you see, it has the ability to archive video. I use a third-party platform called Fraps for that. And then I just use Windows Movie Maker to make the little movie.
Snacks for the Brain is brought to you by the fine folks at the Vanderbilt Center for Science Outreach, connecting working research scientists with K-12 students worldwide. Check out the website at scienceoutreach.org.
Awake to the sight of Sunday afternoon. Result of the time spent gazing at the sky. With crimson shadows falling across the floor. Light rising from whence it came to rest. Angels, daylight calling the poet.